What up, though? This your boy DOC, and we have a special guest on the platform today by the name of Kerry Kelly. Kerry Kelly is R. Kelly's actual blood brother. Today is more of a serious interview, speaking upon all the different things that R. Kelly has been going through the judicial system within the past couple years, and their actual upbringing directly from Kerry Kelly's eyes. So I just want to go ahead and tell everybody from the beginning, thank you for tuning in. If you're watching this on Apple Podcasts, please, please leave us a 5-star rating and a good review. And much love to everybody that's tuning in. Let's go ahead and get into this interview.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? So now, as when I look back on his lawyer saying that I played doubles and that could be his brother in the tape, those are the things that ruined my life. Mm-hmm. You know, it ruined my life because, you know, I was questioned about it. You know, I actually walked down the street, you know, with my children and women, and walked up to me and said, "Hey, you know, you R. Kelly brother." I said, "Yes, ma'am. How you doing?" And spit in my face.
What up, though? This your boy DOC, and I got a special guest on the line. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and where you from, bro.
What's up, man? What's up, y'all? This is Kerry Killer Kelly from Chicago, Illinois.
Cool. Well, once again, I appreciate the opportunity knocking out this interview with me. You know, and I wanted to start a little bit more up to date, recent, with you putting out your song that's like kind of a direct connection to R. Kelly's song. And for people that don't know, this is R. Kelly's brother, and we'll get into a little bit more, you know, as far as the relationship and everything else. How was you feeling about the reaction that you got so far from putting out your particular song?
I mean, well, you know, it really didn't bother me. You know, I know people, you know, they have opinions, and, you know, especially with what, you know, what the situation, you know, and who the situation was actually talking about, I kind of expected that.
Right. Where did you catch wind of See the God's response on Power 105 about your particular?
Oh, yeah, I caught wind of it, man. I actually thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny, you know.
Right.
You know, so I wasn't, I looked at it like this, you know, for me to, you know, be brought up on there, my name to be brought up on that show, it was a big thing for me.
Right. Yeah, definitely. That's always kind of,
because, you know, I mean, and I wasn't really dripping, you know, because, I mean, I figured that he was going to stand up and stick out, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, he's a pedophile too, to my, you know, that's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So let's go back a little bit. Now your rap name is Killer Kelly, right?
Right.
Okay. How did you end up coming up with that name?
Well, actually, you know, my mama, she named me Killer, you know, from the Flip Wilson show back in the 70s, you know. She named me that because I was a little bad when I was little, and so it stuck with me.
Okay.
Stuck with me.
Now, you and R. Kelly, of course, are brothers. Did y'all grow up in the same home?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Same home.
What's the age difference between you guys?
Give or take a few years, you know.
Okay, so he's your older brother?
Yeah, he's the oldest. Okay. He's one of the oldest. I got two brothers, but both, I'm the baby.
Okay. Were you guys close when y'all was growing up? Like, how was y'all relationship?
I mean, you know, it was like normal brothers, you know? I mean, you know, of course, you know, when you have a big brother, you know, everybody know how that go. You know, they want to make sure that you fall in line on everything, you know. So, you know, just pretty much the average big brother, you know.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, we had our little spats, you know what I'm saying? We had our little, you know, disagreements, and then we had moments where we had love, you know.
Definitely. Okay. Did it start off young, like within the household, with the musical interest on both of your sides, or did he start with the music first, or you? How did that work out?
Well, actually, you know, my mom, Joanne Kelly, you know, she was gifted. She was a gifted vocalist. You know, she can sing and, you know, she can hit them, you know, Aretha Franklin and Patti LaBelle notes, you know. And when she, as we was coming up as kids, you know, she saw something in all of us. You know, we had rhythm. You know, we all like to try to sing, even though Robert had the voice, you know. But, you know, so we end up getting instruments for Christmas. We didn't get toys. We was mad and we didn't understand. You know, I got a drum set. You know, my older brother, Bruce, he received a bass guitar. Robert played the lead and he played, the, you know, he was messing around with the piano. So we, you know, it was something that she saw in all of us, you know, as far as being her kids, that, you know, that she saw a talent in all of us. So, you know, I pretty much say that she pretty much, you know, she guided us in the direction, because we was making a lot of noise. I used to beat on the floor a lot and they beat, you know. So she said, I'm going to give you a drum set, you know. Robert had, he played a guitar of one of our uncles that had a guitar, and he was playing pretty good without having lessons. Bruce, same way. So that's why, you know, she saw something in us and started getting Christmas toys was instruments. You know, we didn't get Tonka toys and He-Mans and Big Wheels and stuff, you know.
Right.
Me, I used to take my toys apart. I used to tear them up, you know. I tear them up and try to make it a motorcycle. Yeah. Some type of way, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, y'all was deep into church and everything back then. Was y'all ever, like, considered in a group, or y'all just end up went y'all, like, going in y'all separate ways when it came down to music?
Well, actually, you know, I was a bit young, even though I developed a skill of, like, you know, playing like drums and stuff like that, the things that my mom had got me. But my mom and, you know, Bruce and Robert had formed a band, an actual band. And they used to, you know, throw, you know, parties and stuff in the backyard. And our families would come over, you know, from out of town and, you know, nearby and different things. And she would actually sing Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight, and, you know, and Bruce and Robert knew how to play the actual music. They had became that great where they was playing, you know, the music that goes with the songs that my mama was singing. So they was, you know, entertaining, you know, family and friends and neighbors, you know what I'm saying? Neighbors would come over that, you know, that stayed on the block or over on the next block. They would come over and sit there and watch them perform. You know, like I said, I was kind of young to actually be in a band. So I was in training, so that's how I looked at that. You know, I did have drum sets, but they was on teenage stuff, and I wasn't even a teenager yet, you know. So,
right.
You know, a lot of people enjoyed them, man, you know, especially, you know, the old Aretha Franklin and Gladys Knight classics. My mama can hit all those notes, you know, and it was just amazing to see her up there with her kids, you know.
Right, right, definitely. From your perspective, around what time did you see, like, since you say you were younger, not they were in the teenage years and everything, around what time, from your perspective, looking at R. Kelly or Robert, when did you see him actually start taking the music serious? Was it, like, a certain situation that pulled him to, like, okay, I'm going to do this? Or, like, how did that end up working out?
Well, that situation, you know, I think I started seeing him take the music real serious once he went to, like, Kenwood High School. You know, he went to Kenwood High School, and he actually, you know, he ended up getting with Miss Lena McGlynn. You know, he speaks to her all the time. Mm-hmm. He ended up getting with her, and they, you know, she was his music teacher. So she pretty much, you know, taught him, you know, vocal coached him and actually taught him how to play the piano and things of that nature, even more so than what he already knew. Cause he hadn't had lessons, and he was able to do a lot of things, man, you know, because he's very talented at what he do. He's very gifted, you know? So, that just enhanced, you know, what he wanted to do in life, you know, as a freshman, you know, and you know, so and so on and so forth. So that's what really sparked his interest in music, like it did. And as time progressed, you know, and he started moving on and getting older, you know, he started, you know, getting and developing, you know, background singers. You know, he was writing then, you know, I remember a time that he said he was going to write a song for Michael Jackson when we was kids. And me and my older brother looked at him like he was crazy. Mm. Like, how are you going to get close to Michael Jackson? You know what I'm saying? But that was before, you know, he saw the vision. You know, he's always been a visionary when it came to music and you know, and things of that nature. But he pretty much, that's what he did, man. You know, he got a group. He got like three or four guys that was, you know, like his dancers and background singing and stuff like that. And they actually, you know, I think it was around maybe 1989 or 88, somewhere around in there, that they actually went to Natalie Cole Big Break. And they actually won. They, you know, they won the $50,000 in prizes and $50,000 in cash. You know, and back then that was like, you know, that was like the shows of today that's out there. You know, mm-hmm. And when they won that, it's like, you know, that changed the whole game, because he had been actually going to record labels and they was pretty much, you know, turning him down because they said he sounded like Aaron Hall. He sounded like, you know, groups that was out there, Aaron Hall, the Gap Band, you know, things of that nature. So once he won the Natalie Cole's Big Break, that's when they basically, you know, started, the record label started taking him serious. And that's how he actually got signed to Jive Records.
Oh, okay. Now, when he got signed to Jive Records, y'all were still pretty close. Did you come along on that journey with him?
Well, when he got signed to Jive, I was just pretty much, you know, getting out of high school, you know, and things of that nature. And, you know, he blew up overnight. You know, I remember taking his demo tape to, you know, to the school that I went to, the CVS, Chicago Vocational, and a couple of my guys that was up there I went to school with, you know, they was checking the demo out and they was laughing at me like, man, he ain't going nowhere. I'm like, man, y'all just watch, man. My brother gonna be big. He gonna be real big. And nobody believed me. You know, I had his demo tape with a couple of songs on there and stuff, and I was the laughing stock, you know. But I knew what I saw, because I knew music. By that time, I had developed, you know, into my own, you know, music, you know, type of situation as far as me writing and doing different things. So I knew he was going to take off.
Right, right. So when you was in the process of you doing your writing and everything, you just decided to go off into the rap lane?
Well, actually, I was playing basketball, you know. I was playing basketball, so that was really my number one heart right there. I played with Juwan Howard, who actually moved on to play with Michigan, with Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and stuff like that. But, you know, I had fell back because I had a death in the family. So, you know, but, yeah, that was my passion right there. And then after Robert took off, you know, I pretty much was, you know, I went on tour with him and, you know, went around the world and rock shows with him, you know, on tours and stuff.
Right. Okay. See, yeah, it was some question I was going to ask you about the actual tours. So let me ask you this. As far as the song, not the particular song that you put out that was like, I guess what you would call like in response to the 19 minute song that he ended up putting out. One of the things that he, you know, that kind of shocked a lot of people that he said in there, and I wanted to kind of see if there's any truth to it. He had mentioned like when he was a teenager that he was molested by someone in a family. Like, was that your first time ever hearing something like that? Or is it truth to that?
Well, you know, to be honest, you know, he did mention it, you know, as kids, you know, I didn't know how to take it. You know, I really don't think that he told my mama. It was just like something that he, you know, talked amongst his brothers, me and Bruce, you know, and he told us. But I believed him because I was molested as well. So,
by the same person?
I can't really say that. You know, I don't know. I just know what happened to me, and you know, and then I believe what happened to him because he mentioned it.
How does, like, being of that age, and I'm not sure exactly what age, but going through something like that, how did that affect you?
Oh man, God has been keeping me, brother. You know, I got to be honest. You know, it wasn't a walk in the park for me, you know, to actually deal with you know, situation like that, because, you know, even as a kid, it started at 6 years old with me, and I knew it was wrong. And I was a kid, 6 years old. And the person, you know, who did this to me, they was like 10 years my senior, you know? So they knew what they was doing. If I can say something is not right with this, and it's not right, you know, but I was too afraid to come forth and speak on it, or I was too afraid to really even tell anybody, you know. I didn't think people was going to believe me. I didn't think that they, you know, was going to take it serious of what I actually went through. And that happened to me from 6 to 12 for 6 years that went on like that, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. So around that same time, assuming that it happened to y'all around the same times, and you just explained how it affected you. Did you notice a change in his behavior after he said he went through that situation?
Well, yeah, I did. His behavior was more so, it was more aggressive, and I have to be truthful, you know, like me being the baby brother, you know, even my older brother Bruce, you know, sometimes they would get on me, you know, about little things that I may have done as a kid, you know, because they my older brothers, they supposed to look out for me, they supposed to make sure that I'm not getting into trouble. But with Robert, it was a little bit more aggressive, you know, than what it would normally be. If he told me, stop doing that, boy, put that down, it would be a little bit more aggressive, you know, after he had told us what happened to him. I noticed that because it was actually happening to me.
Right. And I wonder, because that kind of makes me reflect, too. I remember you did a interview, was it with Wendy Williams? You had mentioned something about him having, like, control issues. Do you think that kind of played a part in it? Or you could elaborate on that, what you meant by him having control issues?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, yeah, I believe that played a big part. On his control issues, because, you know, to my knowledge, you know, it was a female, just like it was a female with me that you know, that had molested him. And with Robert, being the way that he is, everybody deal with problems and different things different ways, you know. I believe that he kind of like don't really respect women the way that we was brought up. We was brought up in a way to respect our elders, respect, you know, women, respect our parents, our grandparents. That's how we was brought up, because like you spoke earlier, you know, we was brought up in church, so we knew the right way. So from that point, I believe that once that happened to him, that he looked at women differently. He looked at women differently, you know. Yeah, I believe that affected him a lot.
Yeah. Like, so when all these could kind of bouncing around a little bit, but like from the outside looking in, when you first start hearing about all of these allegations, did you believe it at first, or were you in awe? Like, no, this ain't true. This my brother. Or, you know, how was your reaction just to the allegations in general?
Well, you know, like I said, with me actually being, yeah, I was surprised a little bit, but I wasn't, you know, if that makes any sense. I was surprised to the point that, you know, that everybody know, you know, or everybody is thinking what, you know, what I've been around, you know, and know, you know. And what I mean by that is, you know, I would see, you know, on tour and stuff, you know, he would be talking, you know, to girls or whatever, and I would tell him, like, I would say, hey man, you know, she don't look like she's, you know, of age or whatever. I said, she actually looked like one of my daughters, you know. And I would put that in his mind to make him feel like that's your niece, that's a niece, that's your niece, you know. And he'd say, oh man, you play hating, you know. And then we'd just chop it up, and or he'll walk off, or you know, something, somebody else would call him and draw his attention away or whatever. But the fact that he would, you can look at it, at a child, and tell, you can see the face, you know, you can tell that, you know, hey, you know, I don't think he, you know, she's of legal age, you know.
Yeah, so it wasn't like one of them situations where it's a, you know, a younger girl that looked like she's in her 20s or nothing like that. Like, they looking like kids or, you know, still looking young.
I mean, I got to be real with you, Doc, for me to say, hey, man, you know, she reminded me of my daughter.
Yeah.
I'm a father.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I'm protective. I'm a protector, you know, of my daughters. You know, my boys, they pretty much can, and most fathers think the same way, they pretty much can handle themselves. But the girls, they, you know, they're vulnerable. You know, the biggest father's nightmare is a guy coming along talking some slick stuff in his daughter ear. Because we've been kids too before. You
exactly.
Know, we did that, you know. Next thing you know, we got her, you know. But, you know, when we was kids, we got the girl that was our age or the girl we had a crush on or vice versa, you know, by spitting some things they call sweet nothings in their ear.
Right.
You know, so I believe that's one of a real father. You know, that's one of their biggest nightmares right there to know that. But the bigger nightmare to me is for somebody to be old enough to be their father, you know, in their ear, you know?
Yeah. So were you around during the stages when him and Aaliyah were talking?
Yes, I was. I was around.
Like, how did that particular situation, like, kind of play out as far as maybe the backlash from the media or, like, or maybe even on a personal level of knowing, like, this is a younger girl? Like, how did that play out through your eyes in that situation?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, you know, they had a artist relationship, you know, that I knew, and I knew that was very strong. They had an artist relationship, you know. She was, you know, she was talented, you know, in her own way, in her own right. You know, she was creative in her own way, in her own right, even as a young girl, you know. And that was something that I saw that they had in common. And he you know, he would be able to teach her different things as far as, you know, vocal coaching her or telling her how to sing this note or telling her how to sing it this way, telling her how to lay back and fall back on certain things when it comes to the track. So they, you know, it wasn't so surprising to see that, okay, these two people, even though she's young, they have something in common that, you know, it's a common ground. They both love music. They both artists. And just like, you know, she proved to be a great artist, you know, she proved to be a great artist, you know, with him teaching her and things of that nature and writing songs for her. So I wasn't really, you know, it didn't raise an eyebrow.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? So
people didn't look at it the same way because she was, the attachment was really through the music business. Did people kind of during that time still question the age part, like from internally within the crew or the, you know, family or, you know, staff that was around? It would just, you know, how, that's what I'm saying, like from that particular angle.
Well, I mean, after a while, you know, then the eyebrows start raising and different things, you know, after a while, you know. But I mean, like I said, you know, I was just a shock to hear things, you know what I'm saying, like other people was when they heard, you know. I was just a shock too, because the only thing that I mainly saw was the relationship as far as when it came to music.
Right. Now, so now going back to what you mentioned about, you know, going out on a tour and going out on the road and everything, like, you know, what was the role that you played during that time when y'all went out on tour?
Well, actually, you know, I was, I wouldn't really call it the hype man. You know, I actually, you know, Born Into the 90s, that was the first album. I actually had written, Born Into the 90s. I wrote some of that. I wrote, Summer Bunnies. Back to the Hood of Things. You know, these are a lot of things that I did, and what Robert was trying to do on that album, I understood it. It was pretty much, you know, he wanted to mix a little hip hop, you know, with the R&B, you know, because that's one thing he's great at, you know. So that's the flavor that we brought to the stage, and you know, throughout the world and all overseas was, you know, the flavor of hip hop, and then he'd break them down with. We started off with hip hop, you know, so That's what the show was about. You know, we got the people hyped up, and then he was able to just bring them, take them all home, you know, with Sex Me and you know, different things like that. So
were you properly credited for the things that you contributed to those albums during that time?
No, I was not. Not at all. You know, I didn't really know that much about the business back then, and I just knew that my brother had made it, and me and my other brother Bruce, we was just proud that he had made it, and we had an opportunity to be, you know, actually out there with him, and he done it. You know, he shocked the world. You know, I didn't know anything about the business part. As far as I felt like we in the studio, we vibing, and I come up with something, an idea, or I write 16 bars or write 8 bars or write a hook or anything, that I was going to be compensated for it. Mm. And, you know, I never was. I take that back. I got paid $1,000 to rap, you know, like on a track, and I actually written it. So I never received royalties. I never received any paperwork saying that I actually, you need to sign this because this is the part you wrote. I never received none of that.
Mm. And being blind to that, you just, like you said, you just didn't know that it was going on. You were just going along with the flow. Eventually, like, as time, did it take a long time to catch up to speed about the business? Is that what kind of created the fallout?
Well, no, not actually. That's not what created it. You know, it after a while, you know, I had became acclimated to, you know, okay, you know, this is what it is. I'm out here on tour, and I'm working for my brother, and I'm busting my butt. You know, we would do sometimes 2 shows a night. You know, that's how many people, you know, the first show would be sold out, so they would have to sell the second show. But the thing that really bothered me, you know, too, is, you know, it was like a buildup of things as far as, like, you know, me not getting paid royalties or getting no credit on, you know, on the album. But I actually was working on tour with him, and I was receiving $250 a week.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'm going away from my kids and my family for months. And you know, basically, when I received, I was sending that home, you know, for roof over my kids' heads and things like that of that nature. And I sit back and I watched everybody else get paid a lot of money on tour, $4,000, $3,000 a week, $3,500. And actually, me and Bruce, my older brother, we was the lowest paid people on the, you know, on payroll. And I couldn't figure out why was that. You know, we working. It's not like we just here because this our brother, and we just expect him to give us, you know, money, you know, from his hard work and everything that he did, his blood, sweat, and tears. That wasn't it. We worked. We actually worked. I actually talked to different groups that was on tour. We was on tour with Thought and Pepper. We was on tour with Heavy D and the Boys. Escape. You know, a lot of people, Warren G, you know, and I got cool with a lot of people that was out there on the road. A lot of people respected me, and I respected them, and it was nothing but love. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, me being an artist and being curious, I had to ask, man, what you get paid, man? Oh, man, I get $2,500 a week. Mm. And these, you know, and I'm knowing what the job is worth. I'm doing like 5 or 6 songs. I'm almost as tired as Robert by the time the concert is over. And I'm only getting $250 a week, you know. And one day I asked him, I said, hey, man, you know, why are we getting paid, you know, what we getting paid, brother? You know, people came off the last tour, and they was able to go buy buildings and houses and all type of things for what they was getting paid. I didn't trip on it because they obviously they was getting paid what they was worth. Robert really wanted me and Bruce to be able to be by him. We, you know, our dreams and ambitions and goals and stuff in life, our place was by him. So if he would have paid us enough money, we probably would have built a studio. We probably would have been heard and, you know, got signed by somebody and things of that nature. So he said, man, I'm paying you enough to pay your bills.
Mm, keep you close to him.
To keep us close to him.
Yeah, give someone just enough to eat so they have to come back.
Exactly. I mean, and this is real. This is real right here, what I'm saying. Like, you know, he has a company. He's a businessman. At the end of the day, everything that I'm saying, I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, brown nose my brother or make him look bad or nothing like that. I got to speak the truth. And if the truth make you look bad, then you got to step back and ask yourself a question. You know, why would the truth make you look bad if it's not the truth?
Right.
I was actually filing my taxes with the United States government, with the IRS, you know, through his company. And I got proof of what I got paid. Mm. So
yeah,
I can't make that up. Everything that I'm saying can be proven.
So how long did that continue to last as far as the tour? Like, once you officially found out that things were bad, did you continue to still go on tour and support your brother and everything? Or did you eventually fade off and try to do your own thing? Because I know you mentioned something in your response that he messed up a deal that you had, and you was like, you know, asked him to explain that. Like, what happened with that? Like, he deliberately stopped you from getting a deal to better yourself? That was later on down the line, or how did that?
That was later on down the line. I mean, I dealt with that for 6 years. For 6 years, I was on tour with Robert, and I was receiving that amount of pay. And after 6 years, enough was enough. I said, you know, I'm going to branch off, and I'm going to try to do my own thing. And when I start making moves and, you know, start being heard and getting some record labels and different things of that nature, people will be interested in the demo that I have. And then I'm going to studio and I work hard, just as hard as he do. And the things that I was coming up with, people, they was loving it. And I end up, you know, being talking to different people, and they say, hey man, you know, we're going to do business with you. And, next thing you know, they act like they don't even know me. I mean, the power that he had,
yeah,
in the business, you know, Robert always felt like if I get on, it'll make him look bad because look where he was, and he didn't do it. He didn't put me on.
Right, being brothers. Do you think it was a mixture of him deliberately stopping and the allegations that was out there, mm-hmm, that made the whole family look bad? Would you, did any labels or anything kind of shy away from you throughout this whole period because of the allegations he had on his name, y'all brothers?
No, this was actually before that, any allegations, brother. This was before any allegations that you know that took place. That's what happened, you know. And that's why, you know, this is called My Life. You know, that's my next single that I'm dropping. It's called My Life because it's my life. These are the things that actually happened to me, you know. And it's almost unbelievable because of the star status and the person that he is, and the accomplishments that he has made, you know, in this world, in this entertainment business. But at the end of the day, you know, these things happen behind the scenes, you know, and it's the truth. You know, like I said, you know, I basically, you know, when I branched off and I tried to do my own thing, you know, that's all I was focused on. You know, I'm proud of him. That's my brother. He doing his thing, you know. Why not me do my own thing? And it was so many different situations that I was in where people, you know, one time I was finna sign with Ronald Isley.
Mm-hmm.
I was finna sign with Ronald Isley, you know. Ronald Isley flew me to California, and I was out there with him, and then he flew me to New York and introduced me to Puffy and introduced me to Lil' Kim and Flavor Flav. I'm actually in the video. It's called Float On. When Lil' Kim jumped out the cake, I was there. And I actually was talking to Ronald, and he was telling everybody, like, yeah, you know, he the next thing smoking. But then my brother ended up talking to him. And once he talked to him, that deal went away, and he came out with Mr. Biggs. And Down Low, everything that I'm saying is factual.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I see. I definitely remember the time, you know, that time period of those songs coming out with Ron Isley. That's crazy. So basically the moves that you were going to try to make, you saying that he end up blocking what you had to do and then end up teaming up with those same individuals.
Pretty much. You know, and me knowing my brother. See, I know my brother better than the world do. Better than the world will ever know him. Me knowing him and knowing that, you know, Robert is very brilliant at what he do. And he knows that, you know, hey, I come with this music, they're going to forget about anything that they hear. You know, that's the Pied Piper. You know, I come with this music, they're gonna forget about it. And that's what he concentrates on, and that's what he focuses on. If you think about, you know, all the situations that happened, even with the tape situation, and he went to trial for 6 years. He came with the music, he beat it, and everybody forgot about it.
Right.
But yeah. At the same time, I was brought up in that, where, you know, his lawyers, you know, they have to do things very, very, you know, very tight. Robert didn't ever see it out of his mouth. No, he didn't. But his lawyers, they didn't know me from a can of paint. Remember, I was a nobody. So from that point, when he said, hey, man, you know, me knowing my brother played doubles. If you look at you, remind me of my Jeep video. You would swear you would think you saw Robert, but it's me sitting right there. I actually played doubles. Even on tour, we had the same outfit on when the curtain opened, because his gimmick was he wanted the audience to not know who he was until he opened his mouth. He opened his mouth, they knew he was R. Kelly. So it's a lot of the different things that I did with him, and it was by his doing. Hey, man, I want you to put the same vest on that I got. I want you to put the same pants on that I got. I want you bald headed. I want you to have dark shades on. That was Robert doing that.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? So now, as when I look back on his lawyer saying that I played doubles and that could be his brother in the tape, those are the things that ruined my life. You know, it ruined my life because, you know, I was questioned about it. You know, I actually walked down the street, you know, with my children and women, and then walked up to me and said, hey, you know, you R. Kelly brother. I said, yes, ma'am. How you doing? And spit in my face because they said that I making the tape and getting him to go to jail for it. See, a lot of people don't really know what's real, you know, and what's fake, you know. It's Hollyweird, you know. So, you know, and I done actually seen things, you know, even with my kids. My kids have been through things.
Where people approach them just because of the relation between, you know, that's being their uncle.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yep. How did when you say that he didn't approach you with it, but his attorneys, would they call you up, or was this like on the actual date y'all had to go to court when they, is it true that you were offered some money to go to court and say, yes, this is me in that tape, to get the, you know, to get the charges off of him?
I mean, that part is true, you know, but to be honest with you, Doc, a lot of things is, you know, a lot of things is in my book, Walk a Mile in My Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things is in the movie, you know, as well, you know, so a lot of things is in my music, you know, so I have to be honest, you know, I'm actually talking to my brother in my music, you know. That's why I said, you know, this really ain't got nothing to do with the world, but I'm actually talking to him and speaking to him in the music, and we basically talking in codes because, you know, that's what we do. So
when was the last time you actually spoke to him, like, face-to-face?
It's been about 10 years. About 10 years.
And how was that conversation? Was y'all, like, on bad terms or good terms? Or, like, how did that conversation go?
Well, the conversation went pretty good on my part. You know, I would have to say that. Because I actually called him and I congratulated him, you know, for beating the case. I say, hey, man, you know, I'll never forget it. I say, hey, Rob, man, you know, you beat the odds. I never brought up. I never mentioned anything about my name was brought up, and I was threw up under the bus. I was past that. I was just glad to see that my brother had beat it. And when I called him, I said, hey, man, you know, you won the case, man. You know, I said, man, God is good, man. I said, God is good, bro. He said, God ain't got nothing to do with this. That's what he said. Mm. And when he said that, I mean, I got chills because, see, like I said, we was brought up a certain way. And when you start talking like you don't know God, you're God, that's when a lot of things in your world start coming. It start crumbling down because none of us are God. You know,
right.
So when he said that, and he said, man, you need to get your life together. And I couldn't do nothing but look at the phone. I'm like, I wasn't the one going through no 6-year trial. My life together. My name was brought up in it, but God saw me through it, and they knew it wasn't me, and that was that. But at the same time, people were still judging me.
Right.
You know. So, I called him, and I told him congratulations, and that was the conversation. That's the last time that I pretty much spoke with him.
Now, as far as the movie, the book, and the music that you just named, a lot of that stuff you're gonna be previewing and putting trailers and stuff out on your YouTube channel.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and that's the YouTube channel is Carrie Kelly, correct?
It's Carrie Killer Kelly, the YouTube channel, but we're actually going to be putting it out on We Are One TV.
We Are One TV .com.
.com.
Okay. All right.
It's We Are One, WER One TV.
Okay.
On YouTube.
And as far as, you know, when you drop that next song, they say with the whole project that is going to be on, you're going to give like the fans a different mixture of different styles, or will that's just going to be a single, then it's going to lead into a project? Will the project be mainly revolving around y'all relationship, or are you going to have different subject matters on there?
It's going to be different subject matters, but they, you know, it's going to be on the 773 The Ghost soundtrack, you know, LP, you know, and that right there is, you know, people need to just check it out, man, because that's going to have a little bit more information and different things and a variety of just to prove who I am, you know, as an artist, you know, just to show my talent overall.
Right.
And my group, outstanding members.
Okay. And they all outstanding members. It's a rap group.
Yes.
Okay. And do they have any music out available right now for people to be able to check?
Yes.
Okay, through the same YouTube channel, or just they need to just type in outstanding members?
They can type in outstanding members.
Okay. Now, the next question I wanted to ask you is kind of going back a little bit, because I just want to see as far as, you know, everything just purely through your perspective. You know, when that particular sex tape came out, like, what was your first reaction just when it came out?
My first reaction was, I'm speaking from a brother perspective, you know, not a fan. I'm speaking from a brother perspective. You know, we came from the same womb, same woman, raised in the same house. I told you, that just like you would be with your brother. You know, if you told your brother, don't do nothing or this, that, and the other, he was going to get in trouble, and he did, and you'd be like, God, man, I told you not to do that. That was my first response to that when that actually happened. And then it was just so real. Then when everybody started gravitating to it and seeing the tape and showing the tape and stuff like that, and then for me to even be brought up in the conversation, it just blew my mind. It blew my mind. You know, I was actually, you know, shocked. I was shocked. Like, you know, in awe. Like, man, I can't believe this. This thing got out of hand like this. You know what I mean?
Right. And as far as like the intermediate family, I know you said you have other siblings, and as far as the parents and everything, like, how was your mother still alive during this time?
No. My mom passed in 1993.
Okay, my condolences. So she didn't see any of this going on?
No.
Well, I guess that's, you know, because I was going to ask, like, how did this, I know you said it affected your kids, where they, you know, they go through issues with it. Like, how did it affect the Kelly family as a whole? Or how do people at it?
To be honest with you, man, a lot of people, you know, they turn a deaf ear and a blind eye in the family, especially if Robert is, if he's doing anything for them, like helping them pay their rent or some stuff like that, that's all they care about. Even family, it's not just people in the world, even family. That's why the family has been divided, because if a person step up and say, hey, you know what? Enough is enough, man. That's not right. Something going on for, you know, a long time. It's not right. He need help. When you love someone, you tell them they need help. You don't say, hey, man, you know, that's cool what you're doing. That's cool. Because a person that loves someone want them to get help. They don't want them to continue to make the same mistakes over right. and over again.
Now, you know, like, kind of on that same level of what you're saying right now, a lot of times I would hear him blame, he would say, you know, the negative comments that he's getting either from family, yourself, or other people, it all stems from because these individuals were fired. Like how would your response be to that?
Well, you know, like I, you know, I all I can say is, brother, is that check my book out, man, because my book is going to be able to, you know, walk a mile in my shoes. It's going to be able to explain a whole lot of questions, unanswered questions. And, you know, it can't change people's minds. You know, everybody got their own minds. But I mean, it'll give the Kelly family. What I'm trying to do is get my mama's legacy back. My mama's legacy needs to be respected, you know, because she was a great woman. She, you know, she raised four kids by herself, and she worked hard, and she went to school, you know, and the things that she instilled and taught us is not this here that we hearing that's going on.
Right, right. So you basically saying, I know you say you want people to check out the book, but you was basically just to summarize it, you would say that's false, that's not a true statement, that the only reason the people that's close to them is saying what they saying is just because they were fired.
No, I would say that is false. That's false. They're not saying that because they was fired. I don't believe that, you know, that they saying things because they fired.
Right.
You know, that's just a method of when something go bad, you know, for somebody to be able to stand up and play victim. You know, he's playing victim. He's been playing victim, and that's the whole thing. You know, the truth is the truth. And that's not gonna never change.
What was the number one? It may not be just one particular thing, but when you put out that 19-minute song, and I know you said you should have never said my name, was that the main thing that prompted your response, or was the whole thing like? What was your just reaction to that whole song in general?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I was really minding my own business. You know, I was in the studio already working on the album. You know, and didn't have anything to do with. I confess, it was just me staying in my lane and staying out of his way and staying out of, you know, everybody's way, you know, and focusing on what I'm doing. The thing that bothered me about that, you know, I, to be honest, when I first heard it, I said, man, hey, there he go lying again, tricking the public. But that didn't bother me until it got to that point. It bothered me, but I'm like, okay, this is what he's doing. He plays the victim. I know that. You know, when something go wrong, he say people did this to him. They did that to him. They did this to him because his fans and his true followers is going to feel sorry that they did this. So that didn't really bother me. I felt that people was going to be able to see through it, you know, see through the lies and you know, on things, if they go back on different things that he said previously. But what really bothered me, Doc, was when he said that, you know, his brothers haven't been his brothers. You know, we've done nothing but love and support Rob from day one. You know, if I wasn't my brother keeper, I'm hearing people saying, you know, I'm not my brother's keeper and this and different things like that. The things that I actually know, they wouldn't have never got a 12-play album after that came out. They would have never got another album with the things that I know. God know that I've been my brother's keeper. He haven't never kept me. So at the end of the day, the bottom line is when he said those words that my brothers haven't been my brothers, it struck a nerve in me, you know, and most importantly, when he said that, and he turned around and said that we had, you know, basically in so many words, me knowing Robert and his intellect, he said, we done him so wrong that our mama is turning over in her grave. And that right there, it sparked something in me, and where it was just enough is enough. Enough is enough. And that's the mode that I went into. Enough is enough. The truth got to be told. The truth got to be told, not just for what he said, but looking at the history of things that has transpired, all those families, everybody, my mama used to tell us one thing, and it stuck with me. If everybody's saying something about you, it's you. Mm. That's what she taught us. And that's how she used to gauge whether or not we was being bad at school.
If everybody was saying the same thing, it must be some truth to it. And it seems as if, you know, and it's just, from the outside looking in, you know, as time progresses, and listen, especially listen to the things that you're saying as far as tricking or trying to trick the fans or the masses, and it seems as time continuously go on, You know, you got Spotify removing his music. It seems like, you know, you have people doing the mute R. Kelly campaign and everything. It seemed like, especially the society we live in right now with the Me Too movement and everything going on, it seemed like more people are paying attention to it now. And it was kind of, you know, even weird for me for that song to come out, because I'm like, it's just going to make people focus in on even more. And then for me to see, like, okay, it's actual blood brother to come out and speak on it. I feel like people should speak to the people that's close to them, because you don't know if you're getting the truth or not. You know, you need to hear every angle so the viewers get the opportunity to make up their own mind of what they believe, you know, is the truth or not. And it, you kind of alluded to something that I was going to ask you, you know, for the viewers, if, you know, I just want to give you the opportunity to be able to address it, you know, and you probably have heard it before, you know, for the viewer that say, oh, he's bitter or angry, and you just said something about not being my brother's keeper and disloyal. You know, you basically just answered that. You say you're not doing none of this just because of bitterness and anger. It's all about truth.
It's all about truth. It's all about truth, brother, with me. And the thing of it is why I really haven't said anything for years about none of this situation. But like I said, when a person is constantly, you know, throwing you under the bus, and they constantly, they know they got a platform, and they can get people to believe in different things because they have this platform, and that's what they use as a weapon towards you. You know, we only got two cheeks. If a person keep hitting you in your cheek, is you just gonna keep turning it? You gonna start fighting back? That's just human nature.
Right. That at the end of the day, do you still love your brother?
Of course, I love my brother. You know, I love my brothers. I love my sisters. Of course I do. They're a product of my mama. If I didn't love my brother, if I didn't love my mama, there's no way in the world that I can actually love my mama or say that I love my mama if I didn't love her kids, if I didn't love who came from her.
Right.
But as far as loving me, no, I don't have a problem with Robert. It's been a problem with me. From the word go, I don't have a problem. My thing is he, the things that's going on with him, I pray for him. I really do. You know, at the same time, I got to defend mine. I got to speak on my truth. I got to speak on my life and different things that's going on with me.
Right.
So pay attention to Speak Through Me, man, because Speak Through Me is a movement that we're putting together. No pedophilia. And it's not just about Robert. It's about anybody out there that's actually molesting kids, anybody out there that's using their power and their position in this world to be able to do things like that and get away with it. That's what it's about. Speak Through Me.
Word.
Soundtrack.
That's a dope movement. If you were able to sit down with your brother today, just one-on-one in the room across the table from each other and have a conversation with him, one, would you do it? And two, what would you talk about? What would you want to talk to him about? Try to get him some help or what?
Yeah, actually, you know, to be honest with you, me knowing me, I probably would do it, you know, if I could see Robert. See, I can't talk to R. Kelly. R. Kelly is a demon. See, this is not about... It's not about that's my brother. It's the R. Kelly brand and what he's been able to do all these years and how he's been abusing what my mama taught us against. You know, it's Robert. I can talk to Robert. If Robert ever show up and come back, I can sit down with my brother. R. Kelly ain't my brother.
Yeah. I definitely see what you're saying. And when can people start expecting some of these, you know, projects to come out?
Sometime in September. We actually putting things together right now as we speak.
And what's the name of those projects again so people can remember?
773 to Go. Soundtrack. 773 to Go, the movie. Walk a Mile in My Shoes, the audiobook. And Speak Through Me. Speak Through Me. And I just want to say this to anybody and everybody that's out there listening. You know, if you've been hurt or you've been done wrong or you've been, you know, you felt like that your childhood was taken from you, y'all can speak through us. OSM, outstanding members, because we're speaking up for that. Like I said, it's not just about Robert, it's about anybody. A lot of people was afraid. I know, because I was afraid to tell my family that I knew loved me, but I didn't think they was gonna believe me.
Yeah, and that's crazy, because we, you know, fortunately, you know, I haven't been through that type of situation, but hearing the story of others that speak about being molested, that you know, you hear people say that, you know, I even, you know, even when the Me Too movement, is there a particular reason? Do you think it's because the person, they don't believe that, like, when you, to be blunt with it, when you say, okay, I'm molested by someone, and you say you don't think people will believe you, you think it's because of who the person is, that they just like, oh no, that person couldn't have never did that? I wonder, exactly, like, what gauges, exactly, those feelings.
Exactly. That's what it was. And then you have some people that I spoke to that didn't come forth because that person told them they was going to kill their mom, their dad, and they didn't want to see, they, you know, anything happen to their family members. So you know, they, not only is they doing kids like this, but they putting fear in their heart. You know, don't nobody want to be the cause of their mama getting killed, or their daddy getting killed, or anybody that they love in their family. So most of them do the scare tactic with that. You know, I'm gonna do this to you. I'm gonna do this to your people if you tell, that type of stuff.
Do you believe that a person, that even the situation you went through with that individual, or just in general, someone that's molesting kids, that they have a serious, like, it's a mental issue that can be diagnosed and help, or
what type? It definitely is. It definitely is a mental issue. To the 10th power, and because there's no way, like I say, if I'm 6 years old when it happened to me, and I'm six, I just got off the train. You understand? I don't really know that much in this world, but one thing I did know was this ain't right. This shouldn't be happening to me. So if a kid know that, and an adult don't know that, they're sick. Right. They got to be sick. They need help. They need help. Cause that's not right. It's not normal.
And I know you mentioned that you have two kids. Did it affect your relationships with women as you were growing up until you got to where you at mentally now? Did it affect anything, like how you dealt with women? Not saying like abusing or dealing with younger kids, but just like maybe lack of trust or anything of that nature.
Well, actually, you know, It affected me in a whole nother way. And the way that it affected me was to step up and be a man and protect. I went in protect mode when it came to my kids. I went in protect mode when it came to any kids, little kids in my family or things of that nature. I went into protect mode. I'm always watching them. I'm looking and you know, maybe call it paranoia, but I know what happened to me. I know what happened to me. So I would, you know, I never would want to see a child go through anything like that. Nobody should deserve to go through anything like that ever in his life, because it messes with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah. And one question I didn't get to ask you at the beginning, you know, when we were starting off, of course, you guys are from Chicago, and I know you said y'all was getting, like, drum sets and everything like that for Christmas. I was going to ask, especially with the Chicago and the representation that we see now on the news and everything, what kept you guys to stray away from, like, the gangs and the violence and get caught up in that world? Was it the music?
Yes. Yes. And my mama, you know, she wasn't playing. She could sling a shoe around the corner. I never understood how that shoe bent around that corner.
Yeah.
She made it happen. You know, she wasn't no joke. You know, she was a gangster.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest with you, so I feared her. We feared her. Not that she was, I mean, she was firm. You know, she gave us a chance to, hey, if we told the truth, hey, we good. But, you know, it's the line. And she instilled that in us. If you lie, you'll steal. If you steal, you'll kill. She instilled that in us.
Mm. So what type of advice would you give to, you know, a Chicago native or anybody that's just growing up in the hood that may have, you know, their environment is out of, maybe, you know, drug infested or gang infested? Like, what type of advice would you give to them if you were speaking to a kid that maybe don't have any guidance or don't have a father around?
Man, I'll just tell a man, look, you know, just keep your head up and try to stay out of trouble, because trouble is so easy to get into, and it's hard. Sometimes people, it takes a lifetime for them to get out of it. So think before you act. And believe in your dream of whatever your dream is. If you want to draw, you do that. If you want to play basketball, you pick that basketball up. If you want to be a school teacher, you go to school and get your education so you can teach other kids. And whatever you want to do, be the best at what you can be at what you're doing. Don't settle for less, don't nothing, and stay focused.
Definitely. Well, once again, I greatly appreciate you taking out your time and having this interview. And I just want, give you the floor. Or if there's any last words that you want to say, if you want to plug your social media and everything else, you got this opportunity. You got it.
Okay. Hold on. I want you to speak to my producer real quick. Hold on.
What's going on, Doc?
Hey, what's going on? You all right?
I'm fine. This is Luke from OSM. I produce all the tracks for Carrie. Mm-hmm. All the tracks, 773 to go. I wrote the movie that we in, and it's going to be something big. And I just want to plug, give you big shots out, man. Appreciate you taking time chilling with us. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And, no, I appreciate it.
Letting you know, 773 to go. We'll be available third week in September. We're going to do the soundtrack first, let the soundtrack pump up, and then I'm going to bring our movie out for the last quarter of the year, probably towards the holiday. You know, just give us a little space to do things. It's going to be 7 tracks. We're going to set up some shows and tours, and plus his book going to come out. So I know we're going to be pretty busy promoting the audio book and things of that nature.
Right. Well, definitely at any time in between those projects, definitely be keeping contact with each other and whatever I can do to help with promotion and all that stuff. I got you.
And I appreciate you, Doc. We are One TV on YouTube. Any information you want, any snippets of the songs, all that's going to already be up, the trailer. We already got one trailer on We Are One TV on YouTube, and then Outstanding Members website as well. We're putting that together. We're reconstruction now, updating with all the current information. And Carrie Killer Kelly page, he got a YouTube page too. We're building that up. So we appreciate you, Doc. Definitely going to let you know, since you've been one of the first ones that reached out and showed us love, we're going to let you know immediately. As soon as we drop anything, any new information, anything, we're going to hit you up, Doc. We appreciate you.
Okay, man.
Appreciate everything, Doc.
Oh, yeah. Double salute to both of you.